My life as a child did not prepare me for the fact that the world is full of cruel and bitter things. His sheltered home life had offered him no normal, healthy way to be a bastard. But it had created an inner toughness, even a physical stoicism that Robert himself may not have recognized. Anxious to get him out of doors and among boys his own age, Julius decided to send Robert, at the age of 14, to a summer camp. For most of the other boys there, Camp Koenig was a mountain paradise of fun and camaraderie. For Robert, it was an ordeal. Everything about him made him a target for the cruelties young adolescents delight in inflicting on those who are shy, sensitive, or different. The other boys soon began calling him Cutie and teased him mercilessly. But Robert refused to fight back. Shunning athletics, he walked the trails collecting rocks. He made one friend who recalled that Robert was obsessed that summer with the writings of George Eliot. The novelist's major work, Middlemarch, appealed to him greatly, perhaps because it explored so thoroughly a topic he found so mysterious: the life of the inner mind in relation to the making and breaking of human relationships. Then, however, Robert made the mistake of writing his parents that he was glad he had come to camp because the other boys were teaching him the facts of life. This prompted a quick visit by the Oppenheimers, and subsequently the camp director announced a crackdown on the telling of salacious stories. Inevitably, Robert was fingered for tattling, and so one night he was carried off to the camp ice house, stripped and knocked about. As a final humiliation, the boys doused his buttocks and genitals with green paint. Robert was then left naked and locked inside the ice house for the night. His one friend later said of this incident that Robert had been tortured. Robert suffered this gross degradation in stoic silence. He neither left the camp nor complained. "I don't know how Robert stuck out those remaining weeks," said his friend. "Not many boys would have, or could have, but Robert did. It must have been hell for him." As his friends often discovered, Robert's seemingly brittle and delicate shell actually disguised a stoic personality built of stubborn pride and determination, a characteristic that would reappear throughout his life. Back in school, Robert's highbrow personality was nurtured by the ethical culture school's attentive teachers, all of whom had been carefully selected by Dr. Adler as models of the progressive education movement. When Robert's math teacher, Matilda Auerbach, noticed that he was bored and restless, she sent him to the library to do independent work, and later he was allowed to explain to his fellow students what he had learned. His Greek and Latin instructor, Alberta Newton, recalled that he was a delight to teach. "He received every new idea as perfectly beautiful." He read Plato and Homer in Greek, and Caesar, Virgil, and Horace in Latin. Robert always excelled. As early as third grade, he was doing laboratory experiments, and by the time he was 10 years old, in fifth grade, he was studying physics and chemistry. So clearly eager was Robert to study the sciences that the curator of the American Museum of Natural History agreed to tutor him. As he had skipped several grades, everyone regarded him as precocious and sometimes too precious. When he was 9, he was once overheard telling an older girl cousin, "Ask me a question in Latin, and I will answer you in Greek." Robert's peers thought him distant at times. "We were thrown together a lot," said a childhood acquaintance, "and yet we were never close. He was usually preoccupied with whatever he was doing or thinking." Another classmate recalled him sitting laconically in class, "exactly as though he wasn't getting enough to eat or drink." Some of his peers thought him rather gauche. He didn't really know how to get along with other children. Robert himself was painfully aware of the costs of knowing so much more than his classmates. "It's no fun," he once told a friend, "to turn the pages of a book and say, 'Yes, yes, of course, I know that.'" Jeanette Mirsky knew Robert well enough in their senior year to think of him as a special friend. She never thought of him as shy in the usual sense, only distant. He bore a certain hubris, she thought, of the kind that carries with it the seeds of its own destruction. Everything about Robert's personality, from his abrupt, jerky way of walking to such little things as the making of a salad dressing, displayed, she thought, a great need to declare his preeminence. Throughout his high school years, Robert's homeroom teacher was Herbert Winslow Smith, who had joined the English department in 1917 after receiving his master's degree from Harvard. A man of remarkable intellect, Smith was well on his way to obtaining a doctorate when he was recruited to teach. He was so taken by his initial experience at Ethical Culture that he never went back to Cambridge. Smith would spend his entire career at Ethical Culture, eventually becoming the school's principal, Barrel-chested and athletic, he was a warm and gentle teacher who somehow always managed to find out what each student was most curious about and then relate it to the topic at hand. After his lectures, students invariably could be found lingering around his desk, trying to squeeze a little more conversation out of their teacher. Though Robert's first passion was clearly science, Smith stoked his literary interests. He thought Robert already had a magnificent prose style. Once, after Robert wrote an entertaining essay on oxygen, Smith suggested, "I think your vocation is to be a science writer." Smith would become Robert's friend and counselor. He was very, very kind to his students, Francis Ferguson recalled. He took on Robert and me and various other people, saw them through their troubles, and advised them what to do next. Robert had his breakthrough year as a junior when he took a course in physics with Augustus Klock. "He was marvelous," Robert said. "I got so excited after the first year, I arranged to spend the summer working with him setting up equipment for the following year, when I would then take chemistry. We must have spent 5 days a week together. Once in a while, we would even go off on a mineral hunting junket as a reward." He began to experiment with electrolytes and conduction. "I loved chemistry so deeply. Compared to physics, it starts right in the heart of things, and very soon you have that connection between what you see and a really very sweeping set of ideas which could exist in physics but is very much less likely to be accessible." Robert would always feel indebted to Klock for having set him on the road to science. He loved the bumpy contingent nature of the way in which you actually found out something, and he loved the excitement that he could stir up in young people. Even 50 years later, Jane Didesheim's memories of Robert were particularly vivid. "He blushed extraordinarily easily," she recalled. "He seemed very frail, very pink-cheeked, very shy, and very brilliant, of course. Very quickly, everybody admitted that he was different from all the others and superior. As far as studies were concerned, he was good in everything." The sheltered atmosphere of the Ethical Culture School was ideal for an unusually awkward adolescent polymath. It allowed Robert to shine when and where he wished, and protected him from those social challenges with which he was not yet prepared to cope. And yet, this same cocoon of security offered by the school may help to explain his prolonged adolescence. He was permitted to remain a child, and allowed to grow gradually out of his immaturity rather than being wrenched abruptly from it. At 16 or 17, he had only one real friend, Francis Ferguson, a scholarship boy from New Mexico who became his classmate during their senior year. By the time Ferguson met him in the fall of 1919, Robert was just coasting. "He was just sort of playing around and trying to find something to keep himself occupied," recalled Ferguson. In addition to courses in history, English literature, math, and physics, Robert enrolled in Greek, Latin, French, and German. He still took straight A's. He would graduate as the valedictorian of his class. Besides hiking and rock collecting, Robert's chief physical activity was sailing. By all accounts, he was an audacious, expert sailor who pushed his boat to the edge. As a young boy, he had honed his skills on several smaller boats, but when he turned 16, Julius bought him a 28-foot sloop. He christened it the Trimethi, a name derived from the chemical compound trimethylene dioxide. He loved sailing in summer storms, racing the boat against the tides through the inlet at Fire Island and straight out into the Atlantic. With his younger brother Frank hunkered down in the cockpit, Robert would stand with the tiller between his legs, screaming gleefully into the wind as he tacked the boat back into Long Island's Great South Bay. His parents could not reconcile such impetuous behavior with the Robert they knew as a shy introvert. Invariably, Ella found herself standing at the window of their bayshore home, searching for a trace of the Trimethi on the skyline. More than once, Julius felt compelled to chase the Trimethi back to port in a motor launch, reprimanding Robert for the risks he was taking with his own and others' lives. "Roberti, Roberti," he would say, shaking his head. Robert, however, was unabashed. Indeed, he never failed to display absolute confidence in his mastery over wind and sea. He knew the full measure of his skill and saw no reason to cheat himself of what was clearly an emotionally liberating experience. Still, if not foolhardy, his behavior in stormy seas struck some friends as an example of Robert's deeply ingrained arrogance, or perhaps a not very surprising extension of his inner resiliency. He had an irresistible urge to flirt with danger. Ferguson would never forget the first time he sailed with Robert. The two friends had both just turned 17. "It was a blowy day in spring, very chilly, and the wind made little waves all over the bay," Ferguson said. And there was rain in the air. It was a little bit scary to me because I didn't know whether he could do it or not. But he did. He was already a pretty skilled sailor. His mother was watching from the upstairs window and probably having palpitations of all kinds. But he had induced her to let him go. She worried, but she put up with it. We got thoroughly soaked, of course, with the wind and the waves, but I was very impressed.